you.
I got something here. I want to see if you know what this is.
A cube.
A cube? That's right.
Yeah, I like that.
Hello and welcome from deep inside room 568 of the Taft Hotel. Don't say a word. This is the Q Filmcast. And whether you're with us online worldwide or perhaps nationwide on one of our affiliate stations, thanks as always for tuning in. If you don't yet know, we are the show which brings to you our review of a particular film currently streaming on Netflix Instant. We gather here each week at Jolly Roger Studio where we go around the table to tell you what we thought. That and our weekly top three list, which is always inspired by the movie in question. This week, it's episode 4. Let's just reveal that. Episode 4 of our Walk of Shame round.
Yeah, it is.
We 4. Yeah, number 4, and you know what that means.
It's 4.
The one after 3.
One before 5.
Well, let's explain to the audience what that is. Once again, our Walk of Shame round, where we specifically pick out a film that for some reason we've never seen, feel a tad bit shamed about it, we feel shameful. Yeah. Like we hide in shame just a bit when we talk to others about this film. We
lie. Everybody else has seen it.
And we'll reveal what that movie is and to whose shame it belongs to here in just a bit. But first, let's get on with introductions. As always, I'm Michael, your host, along with, and let's go to the left. We're talking about James Hard Sub Savage.
What's up, Maestro?
Oh, I'm doing okay, Savage. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Yeah? Did you have a pretty good week?
I had a pretty good week. How about you?
Let me just get this out of the way right now. I had a great week.
All right.
Let me tell you why.
Yes.
Well, first of all, no one took my car keys and threw them in a fish tank.
Jeez. That's good.
I hate it when that happens.
Happens to me every week.
Worst. Does it really?
Well, most every week.
I apologize.
Yeah. He apologizes. But that didn't happen to me.
Good.
Car keys were intact. Also, I wasn't humiliated while wearing a scuba suit.
Humiliated? Nothing. That was awesome.
Didn't happen to me, man.
Right.
Of course not.
No, you look good.
Yeah. You look real good.
You think so?
I saw the pictures.
Yeah.
Neoprene
I saw the vine.
Suit you.
You like that? Yeah, it worked out. It worked out. But I think I'm going to call this a successful week because at no time did Mr. Roper yell at me while Richard Dreyfuss was looking on.
And threatening to call the police.
And threatening to call the police.
That's crazy.
I had a good week.
All right. I'm glad to hear it.
I'm glad to be here. And I'm always glad that the guy to your left is here as well. And we're talking about the patron saint of quality outerwear, Matthew Saint Hoodie.
Hey, it feels good.
I don't know what feels good or what you're feeling, but I'm glad.
Obviously it. I just said it feels good.
Let's back up a second now. Is scuba gear, is that considered a quality outerwear?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not really outerwear. It's everywhere.
That's true. Nice to have you along. Absolutely. And how about to your left? Let's go right to Max Gumbo Johnson, the illustrious one. I like that word. I don't know why. It just comes to
mind. Are you trying to seduce
me,
Michael?
If you didn't radiate so much.
Yeah, I'm trying to seduce him. Right. Yeah, Max, always good to see you. And let's not leave out the producer. Let's not do this. This is Adam the Bomb Rogers, the greatest producer in the history of this Q Filmcast.
Oh, hi, Mr. Meyer.
Call me Mr. Gladstone, please. Just once.
Oh, hi, Mr. Gladstone.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Okay, guys, let's get into it. That's us. And once again, we are the Q Filmcast. And you guys ready? You want to cue up this particular film?
Yes.
Let's do it. And let's reveal.
Yeah. Let's see if we can figure it out.
Dying to know what we watched.
Let's reveal the shame. Actually, I'm pretty damn ashamed of this one.
Yeah.
I've never seen The Graduate in 1967.
This is your walk of shame.
It's
this is your round of shame.
Yeah. I see y'all peering at me and rolling your eyes.
You can't
eyes.
Say that again.
I feel terrible. No, I can't say that again at all. I feel alleviated.
It's all behind you now.
Mm-hmm. Really?
It's a whole new world.
But yeah. The memory haunts me, Hoodie. It haunts me.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. I just have, now I just have to worry about, well, never mind.
You have to forgive yourself.
You can't just lay around for weeks doing nothing. You gotta start thinking about your future here.
But he worked so hard.
Right. Well, I know. You can lay around and drink beer for a few weeks. I have nothing wrong with that. You know, if you haven't seen The Graduate, there's nothing wrong with laying around a few weeks and drinking beer until you see it. But once you've done it, it's time to start thinking about your future now.
Yeah, well, don't worry about it, Max. I'm going to invest in plastics. It's all going to be fun.
Not a bad idea.
The movie is The Graduate. I am the shamed one. Yeah, I can't believe this. You know, it's like one of those that I've flipped on. I've sat around for a minute or two. I've never seen it. Okay, so there it is. It's on Netflix. How could I pass this up? It was either this or Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which I'm really not that ashamed of.
Why?
Because I don't like Glenn Campbell.
Both starred the same girl.
Whoa, I'm leaving.
Stop. Maybe we'll do round two and I'll get to that one. But right now we're talking about The Graduate, 1967. written by Calder Willingham and Buck Henry, directed by the late Mike Nichols. The irony here is that I decided to cue this film up about a week before Mike Nichols passed away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought that was poignant to a certain extent that we get to talk about his work. Yeah. This was his first big film. This is the film that maybe, put him on the map, made him.
Maybe one of his biggest films.
Maybe. I've always enjoyed his work. We'll get into that in a bit. Yeah. They're always pretty straightforward films.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mike Nichols, The Graduate, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. I've seen that, Max, have you?
A long, long, long time ago.
And that was his first movie, by the way.
I think that was his first movie. Way to go, producer. That's right. Regarding Henry Wolfe, Closer, Charlie Wilson's War was his last. A little bit of trivia here. He helped start the famed Second City Improv with Jeremy Piven's mother. Did you know that?
I didn't know he started Second City.
What a weird thing.
Wow.
It's kind of big time.
Yeah. Let's just get into this just a bit. It's interesting. The guy was born Michael Igor Pechowski in Berlin, Germany, from which he fled in 1939. Good idea. Married to Diane Sawyer.
Just in time.
Yeah.
Good idea.
That's another good idea. Did you know he's only one of 12 people who are considered an EGOT? You know what an EGOT is?
Mm. A guy that's won an Oscar, an Emmy, a Grammy, and a Tony.
You said it in the wrong. You said a TIGO, but.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what the EGO, E-G-O-T stands for?
Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony. Only guy. Only one of 12 guys. What am I saying? Not the only guy.
Hey, at least I knew.
Only guy I'm talking about tonight.
Yeah. I did too, but you're better than me. So,
so that's Mike Nichols. We're going to talk about his second film and the one he's probably most known for, and that is, The Graduate.
Yeah.
The Graduate.
Dustin Hoffman, Anne Bancroft, Catherine Ross. Ooh, yeah. What you think of that, huh? William Daniels, Murray Hamilton.
Yes.
Murray.
Yeah. You know what this is? This is sick vandalism. I want those guys hung up by the Buster Browns. We're talking about the guy from Jaws.
Mayor Vaughn.
Mayor Vaughn.
He of the jacket.
He of the jacket with little anchors on it.
Love
power
it.
Power jacket.
Yeah. Definitely power jacket. Right. Not to mention a very young Richard Dreyfuss in his first ever appearance on screen.
I don't even remember him in
this.
I don't
either.
Yeah. You
he came in behind Mr. Roper and said, "Do you want me to get the cops? I'll get the cops."
Yeah. I mean, like a 2 second in and out, buddy. You know a lot about 2 seconds in and out, don't you?
That's my area of expertise, really.
Now think about it. You had
Hooper,
and Mayor Vaughn in the same movie.
Well, I didn't consider that.
Yeah.
Woo, let's get on with this. People who also liked this film liked Annie Hall, Butch Cassidy, and the Sundance Kid. How would I know? Roman Holiday and Chinatown. Does that make sense?
Chinatown. I love Chinatown.
The algorithm doesn't work.
That's, okay.
That's just an algorithm.
We talked about those
are correct. Those all are lumped together.
Catherine Ross is in Butch Cassidy.
Oh, is she really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, there's your little tie-in. That's freaky.
No, it's not. It's an algorithm.
It sounds good to say it's freaky. We talked about our top three list that it always inspires. This is no different. Top three. Let me say this now. There's different ways to say this. There's one very popular way to say this.
Right. It's an acronym.
It's an acronym, but we're talking about top three seductive movie moms.
There you go.
Let's move along and let's get into this. We always defer over to the critics, and we're going to do that in a second. First thing, though, let's talk about how to keep up with us.
Sure.
I almost forgot to do that.
Yeah, let's do that.
Why did I not consider that earlier? Facebook, iTunes, Twitter, anything you guys want.
All that.
It's all there. You just Google, look up Q Filmcast.
Yeah.
I say, though, the QFilmcast.net. You know it right there, QFilmcast.net. So after we get done with this, you can go on there and tell us what you think of our review, this film, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. Check out previous episodes. That's it. The QFilmcast.net. Let's get into this thing right here. The Graduate, 1967. I'm going to go over to Matthew St. Hoodie, the patron saint. Something point something, Hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
9.5?
Actually, no, a little hot. 8.1.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I thought
that doesn't even make
okay.
We should do that again later when I voted up to 9.5.
You were on a roll for a while. You were coming in close, man.
Okay, so I've gone cold. It happens. It's a streak.
He's thinking with his heart.
Well, think with your brain, Max Gumbel Johnson. Let's go over to Rotten Tomatoes and tell me what you think the critics gave this percentage wise.
Critics 92.
87.
What?
This is way low, I think.
Well, you know, these things, they say.
It's gone up since then. It's 88.
Oh, wait, it's gone up. It's gone up. Adam says it's gone up.
Oh, my God.
People have been voting.
No, it hasn't.
88%. I'm not asking you, producer, because you're looking at it, but Hard Sub, what do you think users-wise on Rotten Tomatoes?
Probably lower than the critics.
I bet it's higher.
Let me go 83.
How about 90?
Yes.
The people are correct this time.
All right, guys. So there you go. That's what the critics think, and we will certainly tell you what we thought. But what we want to do here, what we always do, is give you a brief synopsis of the movie. Apparently, I'm probably the only one that didn't know what it was. Mentally adrift, the summer after graduating from college, suburbanite Benjamin Braddock, played by a very young Dustin Hoffman, would rather float in his parents' pool than follow adult advice about his future. But the pressure of family friend Mr. Robinson, played by Murray Hamilton, to seize every possible opportunity inspires Ben to accept an offer of sex from icy feline Mrs. Robinson, played by Anne Bancroft. The affair and his pool are all well and good until Ben is pushed to go out with Mrs. Robinson's daughter, Elaine, played by Catherine Ross, and he falls in love with her. Mrs. Robinson sabotages the relationship, and an understandably disgusted Elaine runs back to college. Determined not to let Elaine get away, Ben follows her to school and then disrupts her family-sanctioned wedding. None too happy about her predetermined destiny, Elaine does flee with Ben, but to what? The Graduate was met with positive reviews from critics upon its release, and in 1996 was selected for preservation in the U.S. National Film Registry as being culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. I would describe you the same exact way, guys. All of you. Each and every one of you.
Appreciate that.
Culturally significant.
Yeah, I have no idea. Initially, the film was placed at number 7 on AFI's 100 Greatest Movies list. Man, that's up there. You break a top 10?
Yeah.
Woo! In 1998. When AFI revised the list in 2007, it sank. The film was moved to number 17.
10 films in between.
What happened from 98 to 2007?
That's what I'm saying. I want to know these 10
Avatar.
Films that are better.
No, Avatar. Titanic came out. Judgment Night. No, not Judgment Night.
Judgment Night, yeah.
I'm kidding about Avatar.
What could have knocked it off? Whatever. But yeah, that's it. There you go. There's a rundown of the film we're talking about. The Graduate, 1967. And I say we take a break. Listen to a bit of a trailer of the film. We'll come back. We'll tell you what we thought of this one here in just a minute. Here you go.
Listen, everybody, I want you all to be quiet.
Hey, there's the award-winning scholar.
We're all very proud of you, Ben.
How are you, track star?
What are you going to do now?
I was going to go upstairs for a minute.
Oh, I meant with your future. Your life.
Well, that's a little hard to say.
Because a vision softly creeping.
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
I do think you should know that my wife and I are getting a divorce soon.
What happened between Mrs. Robinson and me was nothing. It didn't mean anything.
Well, that's not saying much for my wife.
The point is, I don't love your wife. I love your daughter, sir.
I want to ask you a question, and then I'm going.
Come in.
No. I want to know why you're here in Brooklyn.
Well, look, I love you.
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
Will you marry me?
We're getting married tomorrow.
Why don't you just drag me off if you want to marry me so much?
You can't stop me from seeing her, Mrs. Robinson. I'll find her.
So there you go. There it is. The Graduate, 1967, the film we're talking about, to my shame. Dustin Hoffman, directed by Mike Nichols. And let's get into it. But before we do that, before we tell you what we thought of this film,
okay.
Max, you know what happens here.
We pick what we're not right.
A little bit of did you know?
And there's another thing.
Bigger.
No, we're going to talk about a little bit of facts and figures real quickly about this film. Did you know, Savage, that in Dustin Hoffman and Anne Bancroft's first encounter in the hotel room, Bancroft did not know that Hoffman was going to grab her boob?
No, I did not know that.
Hoffman decided off screen to do it because it reminded him of schoolboys trying to nonchalantly grab girls' breasts in the hall, pretending to put jackets on. Did you know, Hoodie, did you know that apparently Dustin Hoffman's screen test consisted of him fumbling his lines and awkwardly trying to grab Catherine Ross's ass? Is that all you do to get ahead? You just grope women?
Yeah, apparently.
Grab her boob, grab her butt.
Works for Mike Nichols.
It angered her. As he left, thinking he didn't get the role, his awkwardness was just what director Nichols needed for Benjamin Braddock.
Awesome.
Gosh, I'm just going around such groping women.
All right.
Apparently you get ahead.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Hoodie, in the famous promotional still for the film, did you know that Dustin Hoffman is seen in the background framed by Mrs. Robinson's shapely leg, but the leg in that photo did not belong to Anne Bancroft.
No.
You didn't know this?
Of course not.
It belonged to Linda Gray.
She's got nice legs.
Let's see what I got here. Oh, did you know? Did you know that although Mrs. Robinson is supposed to be much older than Benjamin, Anne Bancroft and Dustin Hoffman are just 6 years apart?
Really?
My God. Did you know, just a couple more here, Robert Redford screen tested for Benjamin. Candace Bergen screen tested for Elaine. Nichols did not believe Redford could persuasively project an underdog quality.
I agree.
No, he couldn't.
Yeah, the quote. I like the quote.
What's the quote?
He asked, he told Robert Redford, "Now you don't get the part." And he said, "Well, why not?" He said, "Let me ask you a question. You ever struck out with a woman?" "What?" That's my point.
Graduate, 1967. We don't use thumbs up, thumbs down. We use let the film tell us what
That's right, because thumbs up, thumbs down is stupid.
It's dumb. And tonight I say, what are we going to use?
Unwanted scotches.
I'm a bourbon man.
No, here's some scotch.
I have some scotch.
Unwanted scotches. So there's the film. There's your currency. 1967, The Graduate. Let's get into this here. I guess I should lead this thing off, right?
You picked it.
Isn't that kind of how we kind of do this? Let me tell you what I'm going to do here.
Hey, Mike, we usually go to the guy who picked the movie. Let me ask you, why did you pick it and what did you think of
it? Well, let me tell you what's going on here, Max. I appreciate that. Ooh, I like the way this feels. Oh, I like the way that felt. To me, this movie is about expectations, right? Why is this film from 1967 with this well-known actor now and this, now late respected director? Why did it create such a stir? You know, to me, that's what this whole watching this movie was about. So I really tried to put myself in that seat as I watched it. You know, can I see why this would have been profound at that time, et cetera? You know what I'm talking about? And I certainly do. Absolutely. I found this to be a fine example of expectations met. For me, anyway. I'm going 9.
All right.
I'm going 9. I can't go to 10 because it's not Dr. Strangelove. Plain and simple. Okay. I didn't take my shirt off.
And dance.
I didn't dance. I've always liked Mike Nichol films. They're always straight down the middle, well shot, well cast, all that. I don't see this as any exception. I see it as meaningful. Full of timeless characters, timeless charm, themes and ideas that are always relevant. I think it has glorious innuendos, symbolisms, life. I loved it, man. And Dustin Hoffman, I thought I knew him. I thought I knew what he could do until I saw this.
Go figure.
And, you know, I think this is a precursor to Wes Anderson and everybody else. I like this movie. I liked it a lot. I'm going straight up 9. Give me a 9 scotches, bourbon scotches, whatever.
It's scotch.
It's scotch.
What do you think of that? I was surprised that it rang this good with me because I've seen pieces of it and thought I'll get around to it. Shame on me.
Yeah, right.
Hey. Shame on me. Let's go over to James Hartsup Savage. I'm going 9 scotches. What about you?
Well, I liked it as well, and I'd seen it before, but a long time ago. And I just have the iconic images, like the red car, the leg, those iconic images. That's my only memory of it. So, in a sense, as I was watching it for the first time as well, it's incredibly good.
Yeah.
I'll go with an 8.
Yeah, can't hate on it. Can you, Hoodie? What do you say?
No, I'm completely in line with you. You pretty much said everything I'm thinking about it. And two, while I was watching it, I was like, I never realized what a Dustin Hoffman fan I was either.
Yeah.
But right after this, I was telling Max that I watched Kramer versus Kramer just because I wanted to see more Dustin Hoffman.
Really?
And he killed that too. I can't think of a bad movie the guy's done. How is he not my favorite guy ever?
I don't know, but he has range, man. Yeah.
He's just crazy good. Yeah. Well, who knows? I haven't seen it, but I'm right with you. 9.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic. I want to go to a 10, but for whatever reason, I just can't get there.
I'll tell you what.
Okay, Savage, can't wait to hear it. Let's go over to Max Gumbo Johnson. You know the routine. You know the currency. We're talking about scotches. 1967 Graduate. Max, what you gonna go with?
Kind of like James, I saw this a long time ago, and I call it the deer hunter effect.
Yeah,
you see something when you're
probably
not at the right age to watch it. It's okay to watch it, but you really don't get the full impact
or understand what you're watching.
Well, you understand it, but it's like, well, I just don't really
connect with that. You're just not there yet.
Yeah,
right.
So it almost was like watching it for the first time again, and I watched it 3 times. I completely love this movie. I think it's fantastic. I'm going 10.
You're going to go 10?
I'm going 10 on this one.
He took off his shirt and danced around the
room. Did you dance?
I was thinking of going 9, but I was like, you know, I can't help it. I can't think of anything wrong with this movie. It's an exemplary example.
I like that. Exemplary example.
It's great. It's fantastic in every aspect. Nothing wrong with it.
I could get there with you if it wasn't for Dr. Strangelove. Let's see what happens there later.
And ironically, Deer Hunter was that Deer Hunter effect film for me.
Deer Hunter was the Deer Hunter effect film for me, too.
We have another coined phrase, the Deer Hunter effect.
Speaking of the Deer Hunter effect.
Yeah, and we're also full of venison, ironically enough. Producer, it's up to you. You're going to end this. You're going to round this out. What do you have?
I love scotch. I want a lot of scotch, but I cannot drink that much scotch on this. I'm only going 6. It's half of a good movie.
Half of a good movie. I think you're talking about the second half, probably. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. We have stuff to talk about, for sure. All right, so 6 for you. Max, what is the total here? How many scotches?
42.
42 scotch.
It's not bad.
Should be bourbon, but scotch. Absolutely. Okay.
I'm once again... I'm past disappointed. It's moved past disappointment with me. I'm hoping one day Adam
it's resignation,
come
right?
It's resignation.
I was waiting for a big sandbag. I was thinking 3. Well, I like the car though. That's what got me there. You know that thing.
That is a pretty
great
car.
Soundtrack.
It was the voice of Kit.
You always make Adam sound like W.C. Fields when you make fun of him. Ah, baby, yeah. All right, well, let's get into this, guys. Let's talk a little bit about why we landed on these numbers. I'll go first, right, because the guy that queued it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
The guy who hadn't seen it.
The guy that hadn't seen it. For me, it just kept working and kept working. And I thought it's a Mike Nichols stamp here. I mean, this guy could really frame a shot. And it's, I'm talking about from the opening credit where he's floating along. His feet aren't moving, but he's obviously lost. He's just in the wind floating. The Simon and Garfunkel score, the music that goes along with it, it's just in pace with what you're looking at. Sometimes a bit overplayed. Just a bit, right?
But I've got a theory on that.
You do have a theory on that?
Yeah.
We can talk about that. I'd like to hear some. That's the only little tweak that I would make, is sometimes it felt really heavy-handed. But back to Did You Know, I understand why Wes Anderson said this movie made me want to make films. Because I think this was groundbreaking. I mean, I'm looking back as a 1967 audience member. I don't think you've ever really seen up to that point this much quirk and charm brought to you so profoundly. And what I liked about the film was it stayed true to itself. I mean, I read some critiques of this saying, well, some of the characters weren't well defined. But what I got lost in were the big themes and the big ideas. I mean, Elaine, Mrs. Robinson, Mr. Robinson, they all just represent things that are going to happen to everybody along the way, especially as a male. When do you break out and become your own man? Is society and structure and all the stuff and the trappings of just being sucked into what they think you should be? That's represented in Mrs. Robinson, in his father, and that's all I needed. The big idea behind this film, and once again, you know, Elaine, you know, the idea of escaping that and running away with youth and venturing out on your own. All these things were just so well defined and so well put out there that I could just really grab onto them, and I understood completely what this movie was. So I loved what the heart of this film is. I love the performances. I don't see how you could look at Dustin Hoffman here and say that this is not one of the most well-cast performances you could ever see. I mean, he epitomizes this role, and they certainly know how to put the right people in the right place.
Sure.
I loved everything about it. My only concern is... I did feel some eye rolling going on during some of the musical sequences and things, but what a great piece of work! I don't know what to say other until we get into scenes. It just goes on and on for me. But what do you say, Savage?
Yeah, it's an incredible watch, and it's I don't know Mike Nichols from back or forth. I mean, I know the name, but if you said name his movies, I wouldn't be able to tell you. I mean, obviously, I know many of his films. This film, I had forgotten. Well, like I said earlier, it's like watching it for the first time. I'd forgotten that it's, in its essence, a comedy, and a very funny comedy. At least the first half is an incredibly funny comedy.
The second half's funny, too.
it has, well, not near as funny as the first half. The whole opening scene with Dustin Hoffman, and there was a little, I see where Adam Sandler kind of lifted his shtick.
Thought the same exact thing. Shades of Barry Eakin.
Yeah, a little bit. Mm-hmm. But that whole entire house scene, from the seduction scene where she gets him to take him home, to take her home, to when he leaves that house, is some of the most masterful filmmaking I've ever seen in any movie. Hoffman's agitated nervousness to Anne Bancroft's smooth seduction, the editing, the camera work, it's just masterful, masterful filmmaking. And the tone, the quirkiness of the entire film, I did feel that it switched once he met the daughter, Elaine. And then it became more of a drama.
Right.
And so this quirk, this lightness of it kind of disappeared for me in the second half, up until the reveal with Mr. Robinson. And then his reaction brought back some of that kind of playful humor. But even then, it was almost like two different movies.
Yeah.
And that's why I couldn't give it a 10. If it had kept the tone from the first half to the second half, I would have been with Max. Complete 10. It's a perfect movie.
Yeah. There's definitely a clear break there.
Yeah. And then there's some really neat thematic stuff. Like every time he feels alone, there's water. He's either in the water, he's looking at his aquarium, or he's in the bathroom.
Or how about the last scene of the movie, to jump way ahead, but he's literally behind glass. He's the fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the scuba guy.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah. I didn't catch that, but then look at you.
I went back a second time and I started thinking, wait a second. There's a ton of stuff to catch here.
Yeah.
The symbolism is so thick.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun looking at this film, trying to figure out what the symbols were trying to tell me. And the second time in and the third time in, Max watched it three times. Jeez. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, I got it. I see what you're doing.
Yeah, he's drowning in his loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
Literally.
What do you think the car keys being tossed in the water meant? Did it mean something in particular?
I don't know. Whatever. Let's go over to Hoodie.
She's a bitch.
Yeah, maybe so. Hoodie, you went up there a bit with me, man. I think you said 9 as well. Am I correct?
I did. I'm between a 9 and a 10.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. Go ahead and riff, man. What you got?
I think you both have interesting points. There's definitely a break, like we talked about, but I think the movie, as quirky as it was in the beginning, it still had a real heaviness to it. There was a lot of sadness that worked, and that continued through the whole thing. And the one theme in this is sadness. Everybody in here is either a sad character or just, you know, dealing with some kind of loneliness or not knowing, not having a direction or not liking the direction that they've chosen in their life. You can't do it better than this movie.
No.
Really, like you said, the characters are just wonderful. You mentioned the music. Didn't like the music. That didn't go very well.
No, I did. I thought it was extremely overly obvious at times. And, you know, I think I heard the same song 3 or 4 times. So.
No, there was 4 times in a row, like back to back.
No, and I was about to go there. I thought that was what a brave choice to play the song from beginning to end over a montage. And then to go straight into like the next song on the disc, like you just forgot to hit, you know, pause.
Yeah.
When he's laying in the bed and it goes through the sound of silence, and then it goes right into another song. That's just so brave. I wouldn't have never thought to do that. And it really worked for me. I thought the music, the score, whatever, really played to this, to the story.
Yeah. And Simon and Garfunkel, man, I mean, at the time they weren't known. Yeah. This was a big, hey, here we are. And if you're young and you're 1967, you hear that for the first time. Mm-hmm. Pretty mind-blowing, I would think.
Yeah. Right, and to add to the quirkiness at the end when the car, you know, runs out of gas and they're playing.
It slows down.
Yeah, it's just, you just feel it puttering out. That's the thing that I think about when I think about this. So it still, I think, maintained a lot of quirkiness through the picture. Not enough to knock any points off. I agree that it got a little bit heavier towards the end, but that's kind of what you'd expect in a story.
Yeah.
I would think any story is going to kind of bring out the heaviness towards the end. Great.
Yeah, fantastic. Max, what do you have? Let's get into it, man. You have a 10 on here. You're going way up.
I got a 10.
Let's go. What you got?
Say so much about this movie. First off, the break in the tone is when he decides, I'm going to marry Lane. That's where the break comes. That's when he decides, I'm going to stop sitting around drinking beer. I'm going to make something of myself. I'm going to do something. That's the point where he changes in the movie. He sits around doing nothing. He's afraid. He's worried. He doesn't know what he's going to do with his future. He's a nervous kid. And the first thing he decides he's going to do is marry a girl that has no idea that is going to marry him.
Right.
That he's already run off because he's had an affair with her mother. And then he's got to tell his parents, well, they don't really know. That's where the break in the whole movie comes. The thing with the music, if you notice, they'll play like the Sounds of Silence. They'll play the song and then they'll play like an instrumental version and then they'll play a little bit of the chorus.
Yeah.
They play that, they do that 3 times in the movie. In the first third, they play mostly Sounds of Silence. And then the second third, I can't remember the song.
Scarborough Fair.
They play Scarborough Fair like 5 times in a row. Mm-hmm. And then in the last third of the movie, they play, Mrs. Robinson song. I can't remember if that's the exact order, but they always play them in like last third of the movie is nothing but a huge chase sequence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's he's finally decided this is what I'm going to do. He goes and rents the room, and from that second on, all he does is chase Elaine.
Right.
For the rest of the movie. That's all he does. Mm-hmm. You know, you pick up on this stuff. Like I said, you watch this when you're 17, 18. Like, I don't get it.
You hadn't reached that point in your life yet.
Yeah, but now you're watching like, okay, I can identify with this guy. I've been there. I got out of college, and I kept working at this dumpy-ass radio station.
Right.
And I'm like, I asked for a raise and they got fired me.
Did you sleep with his wife?
Oh, God. No, not this time.
Okay.
But then, you know, I was like, okay, well, now what do I do? I've got to really hunker down and do something.
Yeah.
And I did exactly what he did. I sat around for a couple months. I'm like, oh, gosh, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, you can relate to something. I mean, I guess not everybody can. I can.
Right. I think many, many people. Most people can.
Most people can relate to that. They've been in a similar situation somewhere like that in their life. And the representations through the whole movie of that are fantastic. The whole isolation thing in the pool and the water thing. Sure. He's always isolated. I just want to stay in my room. I just want to be by myself.
Yeah.
And the other thing, the other big decision he makes is when Mr. Robinson tells him to go sow some wild oats, and he says, okay, I'll do it with your wife.
I'll start upstairs.
Yeah. So, I mean, everything played into the next thing in this movie.
It
moved along logically, and It was great. It was just so, I could never write something like this. Never.
No, it's so brilliant along those lines, man.
Leave it to Buck Henry.
Leave it to, leave a lot to Buck Henry, I suppose. Let's leave the last and final word as to why we landed on these scores to the producer. He's low man on the totem pole tonight. No surprise. Six.
Yeah.
Scotches. I may have to have a drink after you tell me why.
No, everything y'all brought up is a lot of the same stuff I was thinking. You know, it's divided into two movies. I thought the music at the beginning was fantastic. With all the transition scenes, and then you get into Scarborough Fair, and I was ready to just start screaming at the TV.
Why? Because
stop
you hate
playing the song.
Because you hate the song, or
no,
because
I love
the
song.
It was four times in a row.
Yeah, just quit playing it. It was overused.
Loved it.
And the big thing I have is they made Elaine so stupid in this movie. Okay.
Yeah, I understand where he's going.
That's my major problem with it.
Yeah.
The fact that he goes on one date with her. He falls in love, and he starts stalking the girl. She knows he's stalking, she knows he is stalking her, yet she still goes up to his room. You know, they have the little conversation. Well, oh, you raped my mother, but it's okay. I'm going to marry you.
They go on more than one date.
They show you
one date,
but it's
a relationship that developed.
See, and that's
first. Hold on. First off, real quick, I got to say something here. The whole you raped my mother thing. I mean, he completely told
Did
his side of the
that.
Story, and she said,
okay.
"Is that really what happened?" She said, "Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't rape her."
But he still slept with his mother,
and yet
the girl still goes after him.
Yeah, I understand what he's saying.
No,
yeah,
it's
of course.
Just they made her idiotic.
Well, you know what I told you? I read a lot on this film, and there's certain knocks on it. One of them is that Elaine's character is just too dense. There's just not. She's not well hatched enough. She's not well written enough. I mean, really, she's just supposed to go chase this guy down after this. I understand where he's going, but what I like about the film is this is Ben's story. All these people just represent forces at work in his life. And I don't need to know any more from her than that. This is just the force of freedom coming at him. She's just the force of, you will conform. I will get my claws into you, right? Mm-hmm. His dad's just the force of, you will live like this. I mean, these are just representing forces at work in his life. So when I hear about, well, it's not well written enough, I'm kind of glad that they just left it as that. And, I kind of thought the same thing, Adam, but when I put that down and just saw it as its context, you know, I didn't have a problem with it. But the knock on the film is that some of these characters are extremely light in the development.
I think
I think it works for what they wanted to do.
I think they're supposed to be light in development.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to see them as people. We're supposed to see them as characters.
That's exactly
as forces on this guy's life that
right.
He's torn. He's like, I don't want to do what my dad wants to tell me to do. I want to do what I want to do. But the whole thing up until then was, well, my dad wants me to be a doctor, so I'll go be a doctor.
Yeah.
So that they're just representative of that. They're not supposed to be well-fleshed-out characters.
You know, there's a lot of talk about in this film, scene-wise, too. It just goes from one to the next to the next thing. It goes on and on. So let's get into that. Let's take a break right here. Listen to a bit of the film, 1967, The Graduate. Come back, talk about some things that we can pull from it scene-wise, things we remember, things we really liked. So we'll be back in just 1 minute, and here you go.
Oh, my God.
Pardon?
Oh, no, Mrs. Robinson, oh, no.
What's wrong?
Mrs. Robinson, you didn't expect...
What?
I mean, you didn't really think I'd do something like that.
Like what?
What do you think?
Well, I don't know.
For God's sake, Mrs. Robinson... Here we are. You got me into your house. You give me a drink. You put on music. Now you start opening up your personal life to me and tell me your husband won't be home for hours.
So?
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me. Aren't you?
All right. The Q Film Cast talking about The Graduate 1967. There's a piece of it. God knows what you heard, but let's talk about the film. Let's talk about some scenes. Let me start this off.
When I
talk about scenes in this film, this great film,
it is a
with
great
so many
film.
Great scenes. You know which one I want to talk about first? The one that I remember the most is his meeting with Mrs. Robinson in the hotel for the first time. I mean, that whole awkwardness that he has from the time he opens the door of the hotel
right.
to the time he opens the door to the hotel room
okay.
is some of the
so your
best
pre-room.
The pre-room stuff when you just I was almost on the edge of my seat, not because of tension through action, but just tension through this guy's his circumstance.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, what is he doing here? Is this the right move for him? Does he really want to do this? And he goes there, and that stupid guy at the hotel clerk, you know.
Just Buck Henry.
It was Buck Henry.
Right.
But,
no
you know,
idea.
I think that that frames and that showcases what what makes Dustin Hoffman work in this film, because he just weaves in and out of that dialogue with everybody around him. The way he travels into the other party.
Yeah.
Well, I better blend. So he goes into this other, this other party. Yeah.
Are you here for an affair?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's the best line in the movie.
Yeah. He wanders around this hotel room, right? And then she finally shows up.
Right.
And you don't know if he really wishes he would have called her or not. And then the way she coldly comes into there, now he's cemented in and he's trapped. He's in the web.
Yeah.
To me, that's my favorite scene. And then when they go upstairs to the hotel room, right? He's banging his head on the wall. He doesn't know what to do. And then simply you're thinking of this. This is going to be a an epic scene of love or whatever. It just goes black and it goes into Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah.
And to me, I almost stood up and cheered. I mean, that is cinematic mastery perfected by an actor who totally and completely deserved that role to me. But what's your favorite part, Savage?
Real quick, one of my favorite moments in that was when he kisses her. She's leaning up against the dresser.
Yeah.
And he just walks up and he's going in for the kiss and he stops real quick and clears his throat. And it goes in for like the lamest kiss you've ever seen.
Yeah.
You and she doesn't even notice. She's messing with her.
She's got her eyes open like, what is this guy?
Yeah.
But that's, you know, the little moments that obviously Dustin Hoffman just kind of throws out there. Unscripted, I would even imagine.
I heard there was a lot of improv from him on this.
Yeah. I think that's really makes this such a warm picture.
But just as a point, you're talking about the improv where he throws stuff in there. When he decided to go up and grab her boob there.
Yeah.
You notice he turned his head to the sides because he started laughing so hard. And when he broke from that, he walked up to the wall and started banging his head on the wall to try and stop laughing.
Is that what that was?
That's exactly what happened.
Wow. And it just felt organic, too. And I sense that that was
Nichols liked it so much, he said, he thought that was so funny, he just left it in there.
But what about you, Savage? What you got here?
I like the scene at the end with the confrontation of Mr. Robertson in the boarding house.
Yeah.
Where he interpreted everything as a threat.
Would you please not clench your fist at me, sir?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, it picked up back the humor and it drew me back in. I really liked that scene and I liked the scuba scene a lot.
Yeah.
Just the isolation of that and then the framing of it where you're looking through the silent breathing mask, the scuba mask of him. And then it's neat camera work for 67 where he plunges into the water and he's just sitting there. I mean, it's tragic and it's sad and it's funny all at the same and poignant at all at the same time.
But what is that scene supposed to tell us about Benjamin's circumstances?
The director was going for a womb effect on that.
Okay.
He was in the womb.
Look at him producing on the fly, looking it up
online. Womb effect?
Waiting to be reborn kind of thing, yeah.
Well, I didn't pick that up.
I didn't get that either.
I think he was just, it showed his isolation. Mm-hmm. And then, throughout the movie, I think that's a theme. Every time that he's alone, he's either looking at water, he's involved in water. There's
the scuba diver in the tank.
The scuba diver where he's in the shower or at the fountain at Berkeley when he's all alone and he's with the fountain. I mean, there's water equals isolation for him.
I think I understand what you're saying. I would think that the water equals more of like an escapism thing like that.
Could
like
be.
Him going down and just sitting in there was the only time he could get away from these people that want him to be something that he wasn't.
Yeah.
So and that really. To me, sorry to cut you off, but the ending, when he figures out that, you know, this is what I'm going to do, he's been sitting around complacent for the better part of a couple weeks, maybe a couple months, and he says, this might not be the right thing that I'm going to do, but I'm going to do something.
Right.
And anything. She's cute, so I'm just all in. And he makes that trek all the way to the end of the movie, which goes to my favorite scene, which is the last scene at the church.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about him actually being behind the glass, which I think is completely apt. I think that's really intuitive.
All of a sudden, he's the fish.
He's always been, through the whole thing, it's always been, you know, he's been isolated from everybody around him. He's been running. And you have this youth that we've all been there. We've all wanted to run away from what we have to do from this life that's, you know.
I'm there now.
Well, I mean, it really is. It's like, you know, chomping on our heels and we're running away from it. Yeah. So he runs to the one thing that he has, and that's basically Elaine.
Yeah.
Getting married. Well, geez, I would do the same thing if I was in his shoes. And then she's running away from, you know, everything that her parents.
Well, she turns to her mother and her mother says, it's too late for you. And she goes, not for me.
Right.
Not for me. And she runs out and meets Ben.
Right. And then the bus scene where they're, you know, laughing at first and they're, you know, just, wow, look at what we just did. And the laughter just kind of falls into, oh crap.
That's a scene that's a scene a lot of people who detract from this film say they don't like. What are they trying to tell me at the end? They sit in almost stoic silence, looking forward, what, going into the abyss? They don't know if that's a happy ending or a sad ending. It's just left so arbitrary. Mm-hmm. But what did you think of that?
I think that both of the kids, they're just kids, and they're just running away. So they decided to do this, you know, this grand gesture to each other. And being a kid, I've made so many grand gestures. I'm just a grand gesture kind of guy. Yeah. And some of them were, you know, very, you know, unrequented,
yeah.
Requented.
Yeah. What did you think of the bus being full of old people? Did you like that symbolism?
I didn't really pick up on he was on the bus. I was very
old.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But I just thought that it was really nice that they decided to run away. And I think that it was ultimately a very sad scene when the smiles kind of fell off of them.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is. It's a sad movie all the way through. You can't get away from some kind of sadness.
So many great scenes. Adam, what do you have to say over there?
Okay. Here's my take on the ending. I liked it. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, this is really cool. You know, it's a great, you know, who knows what the future is going to hold. But IMDb ruined it for me.
Why?
Really wish they wouldn't have said. The whole thing was that the director was trying to get them to laugh, and then finally they just stopped laughing, and he just kept filming it. It was a mistake.
It's not a mistake.
No, it wasn't meant to be there.
Okay, but he still
then he could have cut it out.
The director still made the choice to keep it going and to put it in there. And
he got lucky.
Okay.
That's why I don't watch extra
filmmaking.
It bothers me.
I got to get this on to 118 minutes. No. What am I going to do? I guess I'll just leave that 30 seconds of them staring into the camera.
This whole movie is lucky. Dustin Hoffman and the boob shot, that's a lucky shot.
Right.
That's fantastic.
That's lucky, yeah.
So the whole thing is luck. I mean, you can plan and plan and plan, but... And that is the theme of the movie, really.
But that's just ridiculous. to say that they ruined it because they couldn't keep him laughing. Well, then he could have cut him out. He could have cut it right when they stopped laughing and gone to the end of the movie. He left it in there for a reason. I think, I think the realization was sort of like what you said, like, ha ha ha, this is so fun. Look what we did. We ran away right after you got married. Ha ha ha. Oh, crap. Now what? You know,
yeah.
it's that realization. Okay, now we have the rest of our lives to look forward to.
Now it's time to get an annulment.
Now what do we do?
Yeah, and see, and that's the
that
point.
Sort of thing.
Is this a sad, hopeful ending? Is it a hopeful ending or is it a sad ending?
They
almost look content, like, you know, we're so good right now, there's nothing else to say. We're at peace, we're in bliss.
You know? Well, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, every time I've made like a grand gesture and I've gotten what I've wanted, you know, there's like a seed that plants, and then you're kind of like, is that really what I want?
Yeah,
is that kind
completely
of, is that
backfired
exactly
on
what
me.
I want? Yeah, but I mean,
it's
that's always there.
For sure.
And, well, I think what happens is they stop laughing, they realize, okay, we have become kind of what our parents wanted us to become. They kept goading them the whole time. You really ought to ask Elaine out. Oh, my daughter's coming home. You ought to ask her out. Now that actually came to fruition. It came to realization. Now here they are and they're like, oh man, we became just what our parents wanted us to become.
I want to touch on a couple other scenes too before we start wrapping this thing up. And one of them in particular, I wouldn't call it a love triangle, but a relationship triangle between Mrs. Robinson representing the old life where it ends, Elaine representing what she used to be, and Hoffman caught in the middle. He's kind of being pulled by both these two people who are basically the same people. I also think of the scene where she lays it on the line with Hoffman. I'm fully prepared to tell my daughter what's going on. She hijacks this car.
Loved that. Loved it.
I mean, that was kind of chilling. That was a bit chill-inducing, but...
Oh, yeah. I liked... Yeah. They had such a cold relationship, and you could tell from Hoffman's face in the montage, you know, just he wasn't really getting a lot of joy, but there was nothing else really to do. But then when he said, you know, turns on the light, and he says, let's talk. We need to talk about something.
Yeah.
And she's really cold, doesn't want to mention anything. Let's talk about art. Oh, great. I love art. You want to talk about modern, contemporary? What do you want to do? And she nixes that. And then later in the conversation, you find out that she's from, an artist background.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's depressing.
Yeah.
What that is.
Yeah.
That she really does, you know, I mean, she did have a life. She was where he was at one point. She had this whole thing planned out. It didn't go the way that she wanted it to go. And now she's an alcoholic sleeping with, you know, a kid, basically just passing time until she dies.
She's sleeping with the mayor of Amityville.
Yeah.
Or Amity. Sorry.
Right.
Amity Island.
A guy she doesn't love.
Right.
Well, she's a cautionary tale for him. Now he's thinking.
Right. And that's what the kids were running away from, like Max said, or you said, or everybody said. We got it.
Yeah. No point there.
It's universal.
Oh, another scene I want to talk about, too. The date with Elaine.
I love the date with Elaine.
Let's talk about that, Max.
So
he takes her
scenes.
Out to a strip joint.
There's so much stuff. It's like the worst first date since Travis Bickle.
It's the same date, really.
It's almost the same date. I love the fact that he was wearing his sunglasses at night, you know, just like, I'm so cold, I'm so cool, I'm walking ahead of you, we're going to a strip club.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just breaks down and, you know, just screams at the woman, stop doing that. And then the way they filmed that, and filmed it like those people had no idea they were being filmed on the street. There's no way they knew they were being filmed.
It was very so genuine natural. Like that. It felt genuine.
It was completely organic.
Yeah.
That was one of my things I wanted to talk about. When they go to the drive-in, they're sitting there eating. And he's
I love that.
And he's sitting there just spilling it out is I've had this need to feel rude to people since I graduated and blah, 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 blah. And then he asks the guy to turn the radio down.
Won't do it.
They don't turn the radio down. So he brings the food in, closes the top, and instead of hearing their conversation, all you do is see them talking to each other. And you can see how excited and everything he's getting.
Yeah, and it holds that shot for a bit too.
It holds it for like a minute, and all you hear is the music and see them talking, and you can just see him getting more excited and more excited, and you can see him just focusing on each other, and to be able to convey that sort of relationship within 5 minutes of film is just that's awesome. I couldn't write this. I could never do something like this.
It was also.
I wish I could.
There's a lot of claustrophobic shots in the movie. I think that was one. The car being so small and them cooping themselves up in there together.
Yeah.
And then, especially when she confronts him, saying, "You know, if you ever want to sleep with me," there is a lot of really weirdly framed camera angles there just to make it really claustrophobic.
Almost kind of fisheye in a certain.
That's
regard.
Kind of where I'm going. But that, they carried that theme through it too, which kind of made you a little convoluted.
The camera was low in a lot of spots. It was looking up. In a lot of the spots with Ben, every time they had his parents on him or someone of power on him, it was always shot from above with them towering over him.
Like when he was, especially when he was at the pool.
When he's at the
pool.
And
they all came and jumped on, oh, hello, Mrs. Robinson.
Oh, I really like that too, because she walks up as just like a black figure. You can't see her face.
And walks up last.
Yeah, these are just entities. These are just forces at work.
That's just, it's just, those are good choices.
My God, this is a good movie.
Is somebody else going up to a 10? Come on.
I'll go. Boom, get me there. This is a good movie. I'm going to go there. And you know, I was kind of apprehensive.
Did you go to a 10?
Yeah, I went to there.
All right.
I'm a bit apprehensive. I was apprehensive because I'm thinking, well, it's a movie I picked. I ain't put a 10 on there. But yeah, it is a 10, damn it. What am I talking about? Mike Nichols, the guy knew how to work a camera, work an actor, work a script, and throw it at you in 1967.
Yeah, I did.
Damn it, I think 1992 with Working Girl. 87.
He did it with Charlie Wilson's War.
That's another good film too. And by the way, we're talking about 1967, The Graduate. We're going to get into our top three here in a minute, but any last words, Savage? What do you want to end with? Anything in particular? Or are we done?
He wants to end by going to a 10.
You want to end by going to a 10?
I'll go to a 9.
He's going to go to a 9. We're up there.
And Adam's going to drop to a 3.
Balance it out.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine 1967. I wish I could have been 26, 27 seeing that.
I will end
time.
With a little bit of Did You Know? The song Mrs. Robinson wasn't written until after this movie.
It was called Mrs. Roosevelt.
Well, no, the entire song didn't exist. He wrote that little snippet, "Here's to you, Mrs. Robinson," for this movie. Then the movie was so popular that he completed the song.
I thought it was originally called Mrs. Roosevelt.
I feel like you're both Eleanor. Right.
Cuckoo, ca-choo, Mrs. Roosevelt.
That doesn't sound very right. Am I right or am I wrong, producer? You have to look into that later. But, Simon and Garfunkel also, real briefly here to get back into this, this was just as much their rise as it was Mike Nichols, Dustin Hoffman, and anybody else, because I think I would have literally freaked out if I would have heard this kind of music in 1967 in a film like this.
It was a confluence of occurrences. I mean, it was... Yeah. All of it together.
Thank God they didn't ask Peter, Paul, and Mary to do it.
Or Llewyn Davis.
Oh, that would have been fantastic.
That would have been fantastic. All right, guys, let's wrap this thing up here. There you go. That's 1967. The Graduate. I think we have a little bit of heat on this one. Spicy mustard.
Internet 45.
45. Spicy mustard. You hear that, producer? Bring on the sandwich.
Couldn't even go up to a 7.
This inspired our top three seductive movie moms. And we'll get to that in a minute, but here you go. Here's another clip of the film, The Graduate. We'll come back, get into our top threes, and here you go.
I'm going to marry Elaine Robbins.
Well.
What's happening?
Ben says that he and Elaine are getting married.
I don't believe it.
That's what he says, right?
I'm going up to Berkeley today.
Hey, come on. We've got to call the Robinsons. We've got something to celebrate.
No, I think you'll want to wait on that.
Oh, they don't know.
No, they don't.
Well, when did you decide all this?
About an hour ago.
Wait a minute. You talked to Elaine this morning?
No, she doesn't know about it.
You mean she doesn't know that you're coming up to Berkeley?
No, actually, she doesn't know about us getting married yet.
There you go, 1967, The Graduate, starring Dustin Hoffman. It leads into our weekly top three list. So let's go, guys.
Yeah. Weekly top three.
And here you go, guys. Weekly top three list inspired by the film The Graduate, 1967.
That was too good.
Did you like that?
That was just way too good.
You notice my lip quivered there at the end, too?
Mine, Michael.
Yeah. We're talking about top three seductive movie moms. Let me lead this thing off. I have a big list. Let me see what I want to go with first. You know, I have a bit of a theme.
Okay.
You're going to seduce me with your sweetness, your gentleness, your kindness.
Really?
Your heart.
Because I'm a married man, and these are all the things that I was seduced by my wife by.
Wow.
So I look for qualities that obviously led me into my marriage, right? Can we all agree on that?
Then you look for chefs, right?
Yeah. And gotcha. Chefs, you know my rule. I'm going to go with, and I'll just say it, I'm going to go with Renee Zellweger and Jerry Maguire.
Really?
I'm going to tell you why. Because the way she looked at him with such innocence and doe-eyed infatuation, she just loved him so much. To me, that could seduce me. You look at me with those big candy eyes.
Right.
I thought you were going to say big cans.
Well, that. But I thought that was very seducible for the right reasons.
Well, it's very sweet.
Aww. I'm talking about sweetness. And that leads me over to James Hardson Savage.
Movie moms that I want to seduce me. And I'm going to start off with Diane Lane from Unfaithful.
You son of a...
Come on with it.
How can that only be number three?
Well, I'll show
let me just say right now. Max, have you seen Unfaithful?
No.
You son of a gun.
But
you
know, I know who Diane Lane is.
You don't know what we're talking. You've seen this film.
Yeah, yeah.
That was my number one. Okay, there's your
Diane
number three.
Diane Lane could seduce me outside of Unfaithful. I don't care.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Yeah.
Hoodie, what about you?
I screwed up, man.
How'd you screw up?
I think you were thinking the theme was cougars.
It was. That was exactly what I thought. I didn't realize moms had to be in it, but we don't know these ladies, really.
Right.
Go ahead and say Betty White, man.
I got Julianne Moore in Don John. I'm going to go that way.
Don Juan.
Don John. Anybody? Anybody?
Don Juan. Yeah, I know. I know the movie.
She was a mom in Boogie Nights. So you
she was a mom in that one, too.
Right.
Okay, well, that works. That's fine. As long as she has had birth.
But also, part of mine was the cougar. Like a younger cougar guy and an older lady had to hook up, too. So this was a tough list, man.
Yeah. I got you.
For me, too.
I'm feeling it.
Let's go over to the producer real quick, though. Adam, what's your number three seductive movie moms?
Missy from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Okay.
She seduced the two dads of theirs.
And tried to seduce the sons.
That was Bill's stepmom.
Yeah. In the first one.
Esquire.
And then it was Ted's stepmom.
In the second one.
Whoa. Whoa. Max Gumbo Johnson. That's a good answer, producer.
It is.
Number three is Beverly D'Angelo in Vacation.
Oh, yeah.
Now, who didn't? I'm not even going to finish my sentence.
Did you see the video?
I loved it. The hot, wet wife. Hong, hong.
I have a big list. My God. You took my number one. My number one is Diane Lane.
Okay. Okay. Well, what's your number two?
How about Natalie Portman from Brothers? She was a mother. She was
a brother?
I don't want to go with her brother, but Natalie Portman, you know, obviously, is Natalie Portman. Because she's class. I think she's class.
That's the word for it.
And in Brothers, she was a mother, so I'm going to go with Natalie Portman in Brothers.
You went Queen Amidala.
Did she have a kid?
No.
Did she have two? A kid?
Yeah.
Luke and Leia.
Oh, damn. That's right. You know how I feel about those.
She wasn't nearly as sexy in that, though. She wasn't sexy at all. There was nothing sexy about those movies.
No, I'm going to go with just Natalie Portman. I thought of the first film where she was a mother and his brothers. Okay, so there you go. Savage, what's your number two?
Jane Seymour, Wedding Crashers.
Oh, okay. Max, does that qualify?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jane Seymour, she's a Bond girl. Come on.
I got you, man. Hoodie, number two. We're talking about seductive movie moms inspired by The Graduate. What's yours? Or whatever you got.
Sure. Heather Graham in The Hangover.
Ooh. Oh.
She was a mom.
Wait a second. She was. And what was the baby's name?
Don't remember.
Yeah.
Hey, you.
That's right.
Baby.
Bane of my existence.
Roller girl.
Producer, what's your number two, producer?
Another seductive mom from Hall Pass who seduced a young boy. Christine Applegate.
Holy crap, what an answer.
Right.
That's a good answer.
I wouldn't call it a film.
It's a funny romp.
It's a movie.
It's a movie. I liked
it. Popcorn movie.
And she was good in it. She was really good.
Yeah. She's good in everything. I like her.
She has some class, too. I like those classy, seductive moms.
Yeah.
Max, what's your number two? Lay it down. I want to pick it up. What you got?
Number two is a kid. Oh, God. Drove me crazy. JoBeth Williams, Poltergeist.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Going back, baby.
Oh, yeah.
That's that
1980s.
And that gray streak in her hair. Yeah. Don't you think it's hot? Yeah. What? Yeah. You don't like it?
I'm with you there. Early 80s linoleum on the floor. Yeah.
JoBeth Williams.
Yeah. Ugh. Ugh. Big wooden spoon nailed to the kitchen wall. Mom.
Oh, I'd like to nail something to the kitchen wall.
All right, let me reveal my number one. I have a big list. Like I say, I could say Jennifer Connelly in A Beautiful Mind, but okay, let's do it. Jennifer Connelly in A Beautiful Mind.
All right.
She was a classy mom. She was sweet, smart. She hung in there with her husband who was crazy
and
trying to
Jennifer
kill the baby.
Connelly.
And she's Jennifer Connelly.
Right. Yeah.
I got to go with the raven-haired Jennifer Connelly for my number one.
Jennifer.
There's another number one out there dangling there. I could.
Now you already said your number one. Don't say it.
It's kind of like a tie.
Nope.
It was too bad.
Okay, I'm going Jennifer Connelly. All right. Gumbo Johnson.
You can say it afterwards.
I'll follow your advice there. Savage, what's your number one?
Maria Bello, History of Violence.
Whew. Wait a second.
With that cheerleader outfit?
Ooh.
Oh, Lord. Lord.
He pulled a good one out of the hat, didn't he?
On the steps?
Yep.
Vigo was getting it.
Yeah.
We're not talking about Vigo here.
Yeah. What about you, Hoodie? What's your number one?
Yeah. I don't have a number one. What I'm going to do is I'm going to let Twitter speak for my number one. I'm going to pick one of theirs.
All right.
I'm going to pick the best one out of Twitter.
Really? Oh. You want me to go ahead and just tell you what that is?
Right now, we still have a couple.
I like that.
Wait, do you want me to revert to our Twitter shout-outs to let Twitter,
yeah, all right,
the
yeah,
essence of Twitter?
Let's mix it up. Let's go crazy.
Hoodie, you know what your number one answer is from Twitter? And it was pretty unanimous. We had several say this.
Okay.
So I think you should get on board with Naomi from The Wolf of Wall Street.
Ooh-ah.
Ooh.
Ooh-ah.
She had a kid.
She had a kid.
She did.
Okay.
She had a baby. Okay.
Now, could this woman seduce you, Max?
is that even a question? My God, did you see Wolf of Wall Street?
I saw it. Apparently, a lot of people saw it.
Excellent. I'm going to go that way. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to have people start to tweet me and tell me my answers. Because I can't get a list together, apparently.
Oh, Hoodie crapped the bed on this one. He was so overwhelmed by beautiful women right. Thoughts in his head. Let's go over to the producer, though. Adam, number one, Adam the Bomb Rogers. What is your number one seductive movie, Mom?
I refuse to change my answer because Matt already said it. He knows who it is.
Heather Graham.
Yeah. Okay.
Roller Girl.
If I had another one, I would have let you have it, but
yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I thought it would have been like Zombie Frankenhooker or something. Or from, I don't know. Doubling down on that. Max, what's yours?
Number one?
Yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis, True Lies.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Can't go there.
I can't go there either.
You can't go there?
From like the neck down, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, the scene bus short in
the hotel. Striptease?
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my God.
Yes, sir.
I watched that with my dad in the theater.
Well, that's your problem.
And he looks at me and he goes, that's what a real woman looks like.
You're damn right.
He's like, wow.
Yeah.
Put this out on Twitter like I always do. Facebook, social media.
Right.
You know what came back?
A lot.
One.
Check this out, man. Jake LaCaze at Caze Delicia says, of course, Naomi in The Wolf of Wall Street. Yep. Bedroom, camera scene, nuff said. Sounds like he's a little busy as he's writing that.
Right.
Ernesto Miguel at Spliced X tweeted in with, a half of Jack, a joint, and Stifler's mom. Is that like the trifecta of his weekend? What is that?
American Pie.
He just put half a Jack, a joint, and Stifler's mom.
Stifler's mom.
Producer, listen to this, man. Boner Vivant at Doug _ Tilly. I wonder why they call him Boner. I don't know, but it can't be because of his answer. I hope not. He says, Norman Bates' mom seems like a charmer.
Well, technically, like a charmer. That would be his answer.
Yeah, it would be. That's right. Facebook, Michael Ann Burrow. A little bit of family there. I'm not going to tell
all
you.
Right.
Michael Ann Burrow, named after someone sitting at this table. Simply says Halle Berry, of course.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Nicholas Atkinson.
Monsters Balls.
Yeah.
Monsters Balls.
Monsters Balls. Wow. Is that what they call you? Nicholas Atkinson says Jennifer Aniston could seduce me all she wants.
What movie?
I don't know. Ben Taylorson says Adrian Barbeau.
Barbeau.
In The Fog. And of course, David Schultz rounds it out with Ellen Griswold. Yeah. That's it, guys. There you go. There's your show. Graduate 1967, Top 3 Seductive Movie Moms. Going into next week, let's get into the big reveal, Max.
Mm-hmm.
It's on you. The reveal, the walk of shame. What movie are we watching next week, Max?
All About Eve.
All About Eve. Are you talking about the 1950 film?
Oh, like you know it so well. Yes, the 1950 film starring Betty Davis. Yes, All About Eve. I've never seen it.
None of us have seen it.
You've never seen All About Eve?
And as someone that claims to love movies as much as I do, this is a film I should have seen by now. So we're picking. I'm picking All About Eve.
All About Eve. All right. So Max likes to whip out these old ass films.
I also like to whip out those good ass films.
At times. That's next week, and that's going to round out and end up and conclude our walk of shame round. So there you go, Max, making a statement. So that's where this one ends right here. Once again, the graduate. As always, thank you for queuing up the queue. If you'd like to offer your thoughts on this film. Or any of the films we review. Doesn't matter.
Of them, yeah.
You're going to go to thequfilmcast.net. I'll help you out with that, Savage. just go there. We're always happy to hear from you. So join us again next week. Going to cue it. Going to review it. 1950. All About Eve. And until then, however it is you say, plastics.
She's a milf and she's fine. Kids 6 and 9. She's a milf and she's fine. baby, she's so fine. She's a MILF and she's mine. She's hot and I'm up and I'm pumping.